it's difficult. It's hard. I don't understand it every day. Maybe not every day now, but close to every day, I still say, God, why'd you take him? I really miss him. But I can see how he's taking care of us and watching over us. I have to be content. And I am. And that's the part that blows me away too, is I am at peace. And it's like, how can you be at peace when your child suffered like that and is gone? But I can. I truly am at peace because I know Jim's in heaven. I know he has a new body. I know that he's not in pain. You know, I'm going to see him again.
Welcome to the Light Your Heart with Hope podcast. I'm Erin, and I'm so thankful you're here. My hope and prayer is that through listening to today's episode, God will encourage you and do immeasurably more than all you can ask or imagine. 2 Peter 1:3 says, His divine power has given us everything we need for life and godliness through our knowledge of Him who called us by His own glory and goodness. Everything. He gives us everything we could ever need. It's who He is, the provider. He provides in our pain. He provides in our brokenness. He provides in what seems impossible. Because of Jesus, we lack nothing. Sheila's story is a testimony of God's abundant provision in her desperate season of need. Her story reveals the presence of God, the favor of God, and the peace of God. As you listen to Sheila's story, I hope you see His mighty hand at work in every detail, orchestrating all of it for good. God provided for Sheila, and He's providing for you too.
We got married. Everything seemed to be going well. We both had, you know, good jobs. We were healthy. We were happy. We bought a home before we were married that Mike moved into. And then I moved into after we got married. We're still in that home now. And I really don't want to leave because, well, neither does he. I enjoy the memories. I love the memories. I just remember the kids sliding down the stairs. I remember the kids climbing the tree in the backyard, all their friends coming over, the marks on the wall, you know, and even now, Jimmy's bedroom, the bedroom that he had when he was growing up, not after he became sick. I don't even want to take the wallpaper down. There's a truck border wallpaper in there and it's still in there. And, you know, the window treatments I made and everything's still there. And I have my sewing machine set up in there. And so when I just need alone time, I go in there and I sew. And then I just feel like I'm surrounded by him. He loves to play the piano. Go in there and I listen to piano music. And I just feel like, you know, okay, Jim, here I am. You know, so when I'm in there, I just remember different things that he said to me. I remember one time I punished him and I said, you go up in your bedroom and you just stay up there and you think about what you did. And he got upstairs and I could hear him upstairs. Mom, I'm in my bedroom, but I'm really not being punished because I've got my Legos and I've got my books and I've got all my trucks. So I'll stay up here as long as you want. So when I go in there, I think of that story about him too. So when Jimmy was in second grade, before we even heard of leukodystrophy, he was playing the piano. He started when he was about 6. He just kept saying, Mom, I really want to learn how to play the piano. So we did get a piano. We asked the pastor's wife from our church, was a piano teacher. We asked her if she would teach Jimmy. And she said, you know, he's kind of young. I really don't want to do it until he's a little bit older. I said, well, just see, give him some instruction, if you don't mind, and see if he'll take off on his own with it. So she did. And he just loved it. The book that she gave him, he just practiced it every day on his own and he really enjoyed it. So then a few weeks later, I said to her, Sue, I said, Jimmy's really enjoying this. I said, would you mind doing this again for him? She said, no, not at all. So she did. And she said, wow, he really has a knack for the piano. She said, sure, I'll be happy to teach him on a regular basis. So she did. So it was just something that he really gravitated to. And on Saturday mornings at 6 o'clock, I'd open my one eye and I'd see him staring at me. Mom, can I play the piano? And I'd say, Jim, you really should wait till 7 o'clock. Everybody's sleeping. Oh, man, he'd say. So then he'd go downstairs and you could hear him fussing around, going through the piano books. And then, you know, then he'd come upstairs. Can I do it now? So then he'd start to play and he just really enjoyed it. And all the kids on the street would be, they'd be playing football or hockey or something in the street, basketball. And they'd say, come on, Jim, we need you to play. Well, you have to listen to me play the piano first before I'll come out. So all these kids from Jimmy's age up to high school would be standing in the living room watching Jimmy play the piano, listening to Jimmy play the piano. And then he'd play a song and say, okay, now I can come out and play. So he just really enjoyed it. So anyway, then of course, you know, he was diagnosed with leukodystrophy. So the piano wasn't something he could play anymore. But then we were at the walk that Hunters had at Beaver Island. And we were there and we had Jimmy with us and he was in his wheelchair. And all of a sudden I see, and I said to Mike, I said, that looks like Mrs. Scully, who was Jimmy's second grade teacher. Well, she's running over to us and she's has tears in her eyes. And I'm like, what's wrong? She shows me this piece of paper that for whatever reason she kept, and I still have it. And it's entitled A Career for Me. And prior to the Beaver Island walk, Hunter's Hope, you had asked if you could do a public service announcement featuring Jimmy. And the service announcement had Jimmy playing the piano. He always, his one song he liked was Somewhere Over the Rainbow, and Mike had videotaped it when he was, you know, fine and could play the piano. So anyway, that music was playing on the radio, that was playing on the internet. I mean, it was all over the place. And so when this teacher came up to me, she said, I said, oh, I'm so glad you're here for the walk. She goes, I'm here for the walk, but this is what I'm here for. This is so amazing. So she hands me this piece of paper called A Career for Jimmy. And in Jimmy's handwriting, it says, I would like to be a musician when I grow up. I think I would be a good musician because I like to play the piano. I need to practice every day so my fingers play the right notes. I'll play the piano on a big stage and lots of people will watch me. And I could also play songs on the radio. I think it would be great to be a piano player. So we all just were screaming and broke down and said, wow, he really got to do what he envisioned when he was in second grade to do on a much, much bigger stage. So that was just, I mean, that was just totally God, obviously. And it was just amazing. And then the neat thing about this is just the other day, I had to have my piano tuned because, of course, I'm going to be a piano player or so I think. And so this young man from church, who I really didn't know other than for me to go up to him several times and compliment him on what an amazing pianist he is on the worship team at church. Anyway, he came over to tune my piano. So he said, well, if you didn't know how to play piano, why do you have a piano? So I told him the story of the piano, why we had the piano. So then I said, then I opened up the piano bench and I said, I have to show you this. So he read it. And I had just right before that had told him the reason we got the piano was because of Jimmy. But, you know, Jimmy was no longer with us. He had tears in his eyes. He said, he looked at me and he goes, Sheila, that's a God thing. So, I mean, even this many years out, it's still something that we can share with people and say, look what God did. So this just touches me so much. You just have no idea. And, you know, even though Jimmy wasn't healed and he's no longer with us, it's just the way God still cares for us. Who would have thought a teacher would have kept a piece of paper for 10 years or whatever it was at that point? And then to think that she would come to the event and give this to us, I just thought that was just so kind of her. But I really believe everything was just orchestrated by God. So, and we miss him tremendously. I mean, we talk about him all the time. Yesterday, we went on the Jeff boat at Lewiston with Mike, and I went with Stephen and his girlfriend and his girlfriend's family. And when Mike, Stephen, and I were alone, right away, all of us were like, Jimmy would have loved this. You know, so, I mean, he's still so much a part of our lives. You know, we really do miss him. You know, God's blessing us, you know, even now. I don't understand why he didn't heal Jimmy. I really, really don't understand. And it's not for me to understand it. But I've been reading, I read through the Bible. And so every time I get to the New Testament, I'm hesitant because it's primarily, or at least in the Gospels, it's all about how, a lot of it is about how Christ healed people. And a lot of people he healed, like the lepers, he healed 10 lepers and only one came back to him to thank him. And I think to myself, oh man, I would have thanked you. I would have announced this to the world. And so sometimes it's very hard for me to accept it, but I have to accept it because he's God and he's in charge. I may never know why Jimmy wasn't healed or why Jimmy got sick in the first place. And I have to say, that's okay with me because he's in charge. And even though I don't think this is best, he does. And the whole process that we went through, we were taken care of in a remarkable way, just a remarkable way. Even the way Jimmy was diagnosed, because I've talked to other families and they say, oh, it took us 3 months, 6 months, a year and a half. And all we do is go to the pediatrician. I said, you know, Jim's acting like an airhead. He's tripping. He's not concentrating in school. I said, he's just not himself. I said, look, he's got scratches and bruises all over his legs. And he said, Sheila, he's an eight-year-old boy. My kids look like that too. I said, well, I said, something's wrong, but I just don't know what it is. That very day, he scheduled a CAT scan for Jimmy that we went to for the on the next day. And that's where they saw the disease. And then this is just how crazy all this worked out, or just how this is just so God. So then the doctor, the pediatrician, scheduled the appointment with a neurologist for the next day. So I went to the neurologist down at Children's Hospital with Jimmy. And who was the neurologist? Dr. Weinstock. And he had just come to Buffalo. Jimmy was his first patient. And he had had a boy at his previous location that had ALD. So he knew exactly what it was. He looked at Jim and he said, I don't see anything wrong with him. I said, well, here's his CAT scan. I handed him the CAT scan. And he said, he looked at it and then went out of the room and came back. And he started prescribing all these tests for Jim that were done that very day while we were there. And one of the people that did his test was Jimmy's Sunday school teacher at the time. It was crazy because Kevin, his name was Kevin Potts, and he walked out and he goes, Sheila, what are you guys doing here? I said, oh, I said, Jim's here for some tests. He goes, you know what? I'll do them. I'm going to do them. And then he walked out after he did the test and he was as white as a ghost. So I knew something was not right. And of course, he couldn't talk to me. Dr. Weinstock came and explained everything to me. And of course, it was just like utter shock, just, you know, disbelief, because he had taken care of a boy previous. He knew exactly what to do. He knew a test to run. And so within a week, we were in Minnesota. So Jimmy could have testing to see if he was eligible for the bone marrow transplant. So that's how fast everything went. It was remarkable. And then I think it was 5 weeks later. I don't remember the time, but it wasn't that long ago because I took Jimmy to the doctor in July. And by August, we were in Minnesota and back for the testing. And then by the end, I think it was right after Jimmy's birthday in September, they called and they said, we've got five donors that match Jimmy. And I was like, five? Man, I didn't think that was a lot. And he said, oh my goodness. He said, that's a tremendous amount. Then he called the next day and he said there was a cord blood donor that matched Jimmy perfectly. All six antigens, just perfect. So then we were on our way to Minnesota the 1st of October. So that's how fast everything went. And then, and our church was behind us. They bought all these plane tickets so that Mike and I could fly back and forth because we knew we were going to be in you know, Minnesota for probably a year or more. We lived at the Ronald McDonald House, which was like the Ritz of all the Ronald McDonald houses. We had our own suite. And at the time, it was the only Ronald McDonald House that had a school right in the basement. The four of us were able to go. Stephen was able to keep up with all of his work. Jimmy did work too up until the transplant. And then, and even while we were at the Ronald McDonald House, the pastor of our church and his wife drove out to see us. So they drove from Buffalo to Minnesota to visit us. And I mean, there was just one thing after another that just fell into place. That was just, it was remarkable. And even when we went to Minnesota for the pre-testing, when we talked to the financial advisor, you know, so they could look at your insurance and all of that. He was from Buffalo. So we're talking about wings and La Hacienda Pizza on Hurdle Avenue. And then Mike's insurance covered every single penny. So it was like all of this was in place before Jim was even diagnosed. It was just really, really remarkable. And then things didn't turn out as we wanted. They believe that they gave Jim too much radiation, and that's why the disease progressed. We were air ambulanced home. We came back to Buffalo. And then along the way, over the next 15 years that Jim survived, we had all these different doctors. We had pulmonary and we had neurology. We had the general practitioner was involved heavily in it, endocrinology, gastro and tetralogy. And everybody was just so good all the time for Jimmy. No matter what doctor we had, went to Children's Hospital over 43 times. In those 15 years, primarily for pneumonias. And each time we went into the ER, you could hear after the first few times, you could hear the nurses and the doctors saying, oh, Jimmy's here. It wasn't like they didn't even have to give a last name. It was Jimmy's here. And then he was always in ICU. The nurses would fight over him. No, I'm going to take care of Jimmy. I had him last time. And, you know, and we could be up there all the time. There was no specific hours. And they were just, everybody was just so, so good to us. The teachers at Stephen's school were accommodating with all that was happening. The neighbors on our street, you know, if they knew the ambulance had come to pick up Jimmy in the morning when Mike was going to work, one of the mothers would show up at our house. Steve, come to our house, or I'll stay here with Steve so you can go to work, Mike. Or he'd walk down the street and people on the street would say to him, hey, Steve, are your parents home tonight? No, but I got a place to go. Don't worry about it. I'll stay at your house another night. That's what he would say. We were just taken care of. It could only be God that did that. And my family, my immediate family, my parents and my brother and sister live out of town. And but I have aunts and uncles and cousins that are here because I was brought up here. And then after I moved out of the house, my dad was transferred. So my family moved to Wilmington, Delaware, and I didn't go. So of course they couldn't be up here all the time, but the nurse practitioner at the school and all the nurses that we had in home, they all became part of our family and they took care of all of us, not just Jimmy, but the way they took care of Jimmy, they took care of us. So then Jimmy got into a program called Essential Care, believe it or not, not that I should be shocked. It's based in Buffalo. And where are we? We're in Buffalo. And then Hunter's Hope. Yeah, I mean, how much closer could we be to you guys? You were always right there for us. We could go to everything and we truly enjoy volunteering and helping out any way that we can. And that was another thing. Stephen could have turned out to be a real brat and a real project. You know, he could have had a terrible, he could have looked at this as woe is me. And, you know, my parents are spending so much time with Jim, you know, they're ignoring me. I mean, all kinds of, you know, alternatives he could have turned to, and he never did. He never did. He had a great, great group of friends that he's still friends with. The week before Christmas, he has a party at our house. It can be 20 to 40 of his friends from high school. And they all come to our house and we have a ball. So we could see, you know, God working in everything, just every part. And then there was a program in New York State for sick children, but you had to meet certain criteria, unfortunately, but fortunately, Jim met all the criteria, but there was 996 children in the program at the time that they approached us with it. She said, I better get going. Next thing you know, Jim was in the program. And then he went to Aspire Center for Learning when he was able, and the special ed at Sweet Home School arranged everything. They took us on tours of all the different locations in, around us for Jim to go to. And some of them we went to and they said, nope, that's not for him. We're end of discussion. We're out of here. Let's go to the next one. So they really, took the helm on that and took care of that. And we couldn't have been any more pleased with Aspire. They were tremendous. Then when Jim was going to age out from Aspire, there was very few programs that Jim could go to because he really needed a lot of medical attention. And so we went to this one program, People Inc. on Transit Road in Elma, and it was highly recommended. And the girl said, well, she said, I'll talk to you and I'll interview you. She said, but we don't have any openings right now. She said, we are just full. And we said, okay, well, Jim still has a year, but I'm preparing, you know, because I really want him to still be able to participate in something and not just stay at home. And within 2 weeks, she called me. She goes, I have no idea how this happened, but there's an opening. Well, we know how it happened. So Jim had to leave his program early in order to secure that spot. So we did that. But so all kinds of things like that, you know, just happened. I'm not saying every day was perfect, because obviously it wasn't. Jim was sick. He was hurting. I'm sure he was in a lot of pain. It was devastating as parents to watch your child go through that and not be able to fix it, not be able to take the pain away, not be able to help him. And we really weren't quite sure how much he could understand. We were told he could still see and he could hear. And I know different times, like if we were going outside and he was in the family room, and if it was a nice day, he'd make all kinds of noises, you know, like he'd make his Jimmy squeal. Like if we'd go out the back patio door to go to the pool, he'd be hollering and screaming, and we go, no, we're just getting it ready for you. Hang on. We're getting in. You're not being left out. You know, so we knew he could see and hear, but as far as about him being sick in that, you know, he was only 8 when he was diagnosed. So we're really not quite sure, you know, how much he understood. A couple times that Jim was entered into the hospital before he passed, there was a big thing at Children's Hospital. All of a sudden, Jim aged out. He can't come here anymore. They sent us to Buffalo General, and they did it to us twice, and it was horrible. It was horrific. I was never so scared in my entire life, because we couldn't be there with him all the time, and they didn't understand Jimmy. Sometimes I would go to see him, and he'd be in the bed by himself. There'd be nobody around him. And it was horrifying after the care that he got at Children's Hospital. And Dr. Sheehan, the pulmonologist, came over to Buffalo General and said, Sheila, he can't be here. He's got to come back to Children's Hospital. And he made it happen. It was just remarkable. And then shortly after that, Jim went into the hospital. He did pass away, but it was at Children's. And the nurses that were there, we were there when it happened. All the nurses that were taking care of him, all the people we were talking to before it happened, they all knew Jimmy. It was like being home. And then when Jim coded, everybody just came out of the woodwork, and we were just standing here, and you could just see people just sobbing, and their hearts were broken. And we knew how much they loved and cared for Jimmy. And I mean, of course we were reacting the same way. But I said to Mike, I said, Jimmy passed away at Children's. That's what I wanted. That gave me comfort knowing every single thing was done and it was truly was Jimmy's time. That he wasn't by himself. He wasn't left alone. That was really remarkable. That really was. And even now when we go to the cemetery, I remember when Mikey Ramos passed, it was 6 months or so, or no, it was less than a year after Jimmy passed, because Jimmy passed in July and Mikey passed in April. And I remember going to the cemetery, because I didn't find out about it right away. I didn't know. Find out about it for like a month or something. But anyway, I remember going to the cemetery and I said, Jim, I got to tell you something. And we always had these spinners. We're going there this weekend because it's Jimmy's anniversary on Sunday. But anyway, we put these spinners there, and honest and truly, every time we go there, it could be as calm a day as ever. And the closer we get to his location, it starts to spin. And I just think, you know, God's just got the sense of humor. That's just great. So I went that day and I'm like, Jim, I got to tell you something. Why aren't you spinning? And it wasn't spinning and it wasn't spinning. And it was a day that it should have been spinning. And I'm like, well, Jim, I got to tell you this. I got to tell you, Mikey Ramos went to heaven. So you got to find him. And right away it started to spin, as if to say, Mom, we're busy playing catch. Leave us alone. I'll talk to you later. That's all I could think of. I'll never forget that. it's difficult. It's hard. I don't understand it. Close to every day, I still say, God, why'd you take him? I really miss him. But I can see how he's taking care of us and watching over us. And I have to be content. And that's the part that blows me away too, is I am at peace. And it's like, how can you be at peace when your child suffered like that and is gone? But I can. I truly am at peace because I know Jim's in heaven. I know that, you know, he has a new body. I know that he's not in pain. You know, I'm going to see him again. That's what I'm looking forward to. And then when I think about the parents with the children through Hunter's Hope and all of us, I just think, man, we're going to have the best party. Can you imagine? Wow. It's just going to be great. And so I have to look at it that, but I see Steve and I see how hard it is for Steve. Even now, you know, different times he'll say, Mom, I really miss Jim. You know, I miss not having a brother to do things with. And that they were only 20 months apart. So they did everything together. They were a year apart in school. And, you know, they had all the same friends for the most part, because they were still little. They had the same, they had a lot of the same interests, not every single thing, of course, but a lot of the same interests. And I still remember Stephen was maybe 4 years old. So Jimmy was, you know, not quite, was a little over two. And I remember Stephen saying to me, Mom, I know I'm older than Jimmy, but I don't remember when he wasn't here. And I just love that. That just has always stuck with me, you know, that Jimmy's always been a part of his life and he always will be. And thanks to Hunter's Hope with Jimmy or Stephen being able to work on the board, I think that that's helping Stephen too. I really do. A lot that he taught us is patience. He taught us resilience. He just taught us how to breathe and basically accept what's happening, really, because that's what he had to do. He couldn't protest. He couldn't make it end. He couldn't make it stop. He couldn't change it. And so he's taught me to just really accept what I have to accept, because I have the ability to make change. I go a step further then. And then if I can change something for the better, then I want to do that. Just like with Essential Care, when Jimmy was part of their program, they asked me to speak at a couple different functions. And so I said, yes. Then when I got to the functions, there was over 1,000 people there. Well, who in the world wants to get up in front of 1,000 people? Certainly not me. I'm a behind the scenes accountant here. You know, I really don't want anybody to know who I am. But I've got to tell you, I was able to get up there and talk. I wasn't nervous. I just spoke from the heart because I was very passionate about what they did for Jim. And I actually had people come up to me afterwards and say, wow, are you a public speaker? And I nearly fell over because it's the last thing I would want to do is be a public speaker. I said, no, and then I just explained to them. I said, it means a lot to me. And I just wanted to make sure other people understood that. I was a parent advocate for special ed at Sweet Home. If you're a parent, you can become a parent advocate. And so you go to the meetings and you sit there when when the other parents are talking to the special ed department and any other outside departments that have to come in to determine what the best route is for their child to go. And so I wanted to be there so that I could encourage these people, because to be honest with you, none of these people had kids that were as severely sick as Jimmy. And so when they would, you know, make a comment, oh, my son can't do this, or my son, and I'd say, well, what can your son do? And I'd say, that's awesome. Your son can do that. They'd say, well, it's hard for me to do this. And I would try to think of a way that they could help them. And I had a lot, please don't think I'm tooting my own horn, because I don't want to. I was just surprised that I was able to do that. Each day, I really just ask God for wisdom and direction. And I still do. I still do. And I felt that through all these things I've shared with you, that I've been given it. I really have been given it. And even now, just with work being so crazy and my desk piled so high, So many times I just stop and I just say, Lord, I need your help. I need direction. You have to show me what to do. And he does. I took it a step further with what Jim showed me. And I tried to do what maybe if he was able to do something, what he would have done. And so that's what I'd have to say. Just because I knew God and he was my savior, my personal savior, that it was easier. It really wasn't. It's hard. You have to put the time into it. God is right there for you, but you have to let him know that you want him in your life. You have to let him know that you need him, I mean, he knows all of this, but he wants you, I felt anyway, that he wants you to come to him. He's right there for you, but I felt that he wanted me to come to him, and not just once in a while, not just when I hit a prayer request, but all the time. And I just felt that I really had to get to know him. And even though I've been reading through the Bible on a regular basis, each time I read a passage, even though I've read it 20 times before, I feel like I get something else out of it. But I just really feel that you have to put the time and the energy, and you have to let God know that, yes, I want you in my life. Not that he doesn't know that already. Of course, he knows everything. But he just really, I just feel like he blesses you. Not that he answers all your prayers the way you want them to, but I just feel like he truly blesses you when you have a close relationship with him. And I'm not saying you get everything perfect, you get everything right, you know, you get everything you ask for. That certainly isn't it. But I just feel like if you're in a close relationship with him, that even if things don't go the way you want them to, whether they're big or small, you can accept them. Like I said, go back to understanding that he is God. When Jimmy was first diagnosed, I was reading in Ephesians, and this verse, this has stuck with me, and it still sticks with me today, and I still can't comprehend it. It's Ephesians 3:16-20. It says, I pray that out of his glorious riches, he may strengthen you with power through his Spirit in your inner being, so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith. And I pray that you, being rooted and established in love, may have power together with all the saints to grasp how wide, how long, and how deep is the love of Christ. And then, you know, it goes on to say, now to him who's able to do immeasurably more than all we ask or think. And a lot of people look at 3:20 and that's the one they focus on, you know, is that he's going to bless me. But I just can't even wrap my head around that verse, to grasp how wide and long and high and deep is the love of Christ, and to know with this love that surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled to the measure of all the fullness of God. I can't tell you how many times I read that in different versions, and I can't comprehend it. I want to dig deeper so that I can understand more, but I just can't believe that me, a wife, a mother, just me here, he's given that verse to me. And it's not something you learn overnight. It's something that I think you can feel his love right away. As far as going through the trial of having a sick child and everything that comes with it, for me, it was a learning process along the way. I had to learn it, and I had to experience it with each situation or with each day along the way. But I had to put the time into it. I got so much more out of it than what I put into it. And I still do. But that's hard to explain to people when they're in the middle of all of this. You know, they think, oh, God doesn't love me. There is no God. How can he allow this to happen to a child? So those questions are hard for me to answer, to comfort someone. They're very hard, because I don't know if anybody could have comforted me then. I really don't, because I was mad. Why can't, you know, these people that don't care, take care of their children? You know, why doesn't something awful happen to them? Or why can't some child that's going to, you know, pass anyway from, you know, that's going to be a drug dealer or a murderer down the road, you know, why is it Jim? And you're never going to get the answer, but I can't even question God. So another thing in Romans 11:33, it says, oh, the depth of the riches of the wisdom and knowledge of God. How unsearchable his judgments and his paths beyond tracing out. Who has known the mind of God, or who has been his counselor? Who has ever given to God that God should repay them? Those are two sections that really speak to me over and over again. I would just hope that I can help someone else, you know, encourage someone. That's what I really hope that I can do, because, you know, the Bible does say that you go through these trials so that you can help others. So you know, you're never going to wear the same shoes they wear, but you might be the one that's closest to it. And if you can encourage somebody and help them, then that's what I feel like I should do.
Sheila's unshakable faith and incredible story encourages me in so many ways. It makes me look at my own life and recognize all the ways in which God has been providing for me, not only in this moment, but throughout my entire life. If we are willing to be still and reflect, we will see that we were never alone, never forgotten, never abandoned, and never in need of anything more than Him. We would see that He has been providing all along. To learn more about Sheila's story, check out the show notes. Next week is our last episode to wrap up season one of the Light Your Heart with Hope podcast. You will hear from the parents of an incredible boy named Owen. Their story is a testimony of giving the unknown to a God who knows. Thank you so much for being here. I hope that Sheila's story and Jim's life encourage you to share your own story. You matter, your life matters, and your story can make an impact that matters for eternity. Make a difference today for someone who is fighting for their tomorrow.